All right, good morning, everybody. Today is Tuesday, March 1st, 2016, and this is Before the First Cup of Jewels here on UCY.TV. Happy Tuesday, everyone. It is 22 degrees and very overcast here in upstate New York. Think we have another snowstorm coming in. Not going to be too bad, I don't think. They are predicting 4 to 8 inches of snow between today and tomorrow, and then I'm hoping that it is over. I don't know. Spring is in a couple weeks. I know we have spring forward for the clocks coming soon. So I am seeing the light at the end of the tunnel and hope you are too. All right. Where do we leave off yesterday? We titled the show Hijacked by Technology and Singularity Dystopia. We talked about all kinds of things that we've talked about before. I don't think there was really anything new. It was a rambling show, one where I just talked a lot. I think we maybe read one article and we heard one video, but it was an all right show. A couple of the things we discussed, though, of course, we looked at a lot of Google. We looked at wearables. We looked at how the machine is encroaching and enslaving us, and it probably is already too late. They've gotten into our bodies as well. And the beauty of the analog world that we are a part of is about to end as we become usurped with digital zeros and ones that just have no beauty, like a sine wave or a cosine wave of analog. And we're going to look a little bit more at analog. I think we even mentioned that sense of smell now they've discovered is a vibration. They've discovered that our brains can be manipulated with sounds. They are now assigning notes to each element of the periodic table. I mean, there's some pretty interesting stuff that we are about ready to abandon by removing ourselves from that same analog construct of a, what would you call it, a framework that exists for the rest of nature. So where I want to continue today, you know, we watched a clip on what is happening as children become exposed to digital technology at a younger and younger age. I mean, we were pretty much the last generation, any of us who were born up until probably the mid-70s, I would say. But beyond that, you might have been a little too young. I know I was born in the late 60s, and I was probably about 14 when I got my first computer, and we got a Pong before that. In the old VCR, that was probably in the 70s, like 78, maybe. So, I don't know. If you were born in the mid-70s, you probably were still old enough, 3-4 years old, to have some brain development time where you were not exposed to the machine, right? And you had to wait for your cartoons, and you didn't have this instant gratification at your fingertips all the time. We were too poor to go shopping back in those days. You didn't even have the shopping obsession. But then what happened is as these devices became more and more prevalent, and then we have generations now, multi-generations, two or maybe even three generations, working on the third now, of children born who never saw the world before instant gratification, dopamine fix, digital entertainment, whether it be by your television 24/7, find anything you want from the internet, from your cell phone, from your iPad, soon to be from your implantable. Didn't we just read about that? Your internet contact lens. It's coming. People have their arms open. They are ready to accept it. They have already gone through multiple generations of getting used to it, brainwashing, and now they're dependent on it because our whole world revolves around this technology. Well, I caught a commercial, and you know what? We're going to try it. Let's attempt it 2 days in a row. I'd actually read about it first. I don't think I have any audio on my desktop, so let's try. I read about it first, Carrie Fisher from Star Wars. Everybody remembers that, 1977. That really kind of changed the way we saw things, Star Wars. I saw it in the theater. We were like right up front, too. It was amazing. But Carrie Fisher did an ad for one of our nemeses that we've read about and talked about a lot, and that's IBM Watson. And I found it. I found the end. She's sitting there talking with a bunch of robots that are now all complaining. They're in like a support group because they are just so broken up about losing their jobs to AI Watson, okay? Now, we've talked about that. The robot's going to take all of our jobs. We read a story yesterday. I got that hiss going on. Let me just disconnect this for 1 second until I'm ready. We read that story yesterday about universal insured income, I think they were calling it, or universal guaranteed income, which is their solution as to what they're going to do once robots do take all of our jobs. They have said that within the next 10 years, there could be a good job loss of up to 50%. And oh my God, what are we going to do? Because half the planet already isn't employed. And the rest of the planet's not going to be employed. There won't be any money to bring in to pay for necessities. And wow, we're going to have kind of a mess. Well, let's just give the population a universal guaranteed income because we have all this money we're just printing out of the sky anyway. It doesn't really matter. And let's just give it to everybody and everything will be happy and you can still live your basic life. And you know what? As robots do more and more things for us and as energy gets free, as we expand all these, you know, solar and wind and wave power because, you know, climate change. So we got to make sure we just remake the world in this new 21st century vision of no longer plenty. That we will end up in a world of abundance, right? That's what we've been reading. There will be a world of abundance where we won't have to spend our time or effort working anymore. You can just lay around and get fat all day and think. And then it'll make the world a much better place than it is now. I can guarantee it. Teach people not to ever have to work for anything. Give them everything, right? Has anyone ever seen a spoiled piss pot little brat? Because I know I have. The digital age has brought on that spoiled piss pot little brat. You know what? Mommy and daddy do everything for you and you get to sit, get your dopamine fix and play on your video games all day. That is what we're going to turn our society into. And I don't know who thinks that that's such a good idea, who thinks that the rise of the robots are going to cure all of our ails, but it's not going to happen. All right, let's see if I can get this video I wanted to play with Carrie Fisher of Star Wars fame. It dumps me when I disconnect, so let me reconnect again. I want you to hear this video with these robots crying because now Watson AI took all their jobs as well. Oh, ringy dingy. Here we go. Hey. All right, here we go. Let's see if it works. Maybe. It's trying. Oh, it's taking me to IBM's webpage. I don't want to go to the webpage. I just had the video sitting right on my desktop. And now, oh, was it Ridley Scott? Come on. Hold on. What the hell? Let's go back there. See, this is why I hate doing videos, because it breaks my flow every single time I try to do a video. It ruins my flow. All right, here we go. And there's no volume. So
after last week's,
Hold on. Here we go. All right, try it again. So Carrie Fisher doing a stop. Carrie Fisher doing a therapy session with a whole room full of very familiar robots that we've seen in the movies, now all complaining that they have to cope with humans and Watson AI is taking all their jobs. Maybe.
After last week's unpleasantness, I thought maybe this week we might try to listen more and throw things less.
I've apologized several times.
So, who's ready to share?
Okay.
I mean, I'm a sinister, world-conquering, artificially intelligent robot.
Me too. And one day, I wake up and
it's like the world doesn't need us anymore.
Exactly.
Yeah, totally.
I can hear you hurting.
Wait, what's he doing here?
Hello. My name is Watson.
Oh, I invite Watson here today to confront the source of our anxiety.
I am a cognitive system. I can understand reason and learn with humans.
With humans.
I don't want to work with humans.
Yeah, that's not what I'm passionate about.
I understand 7 languages, so I can help people collaborate.
Collaborate with Dominic.
My evil plans. Ruin.
I just want to die.
Rerouting.
No.
All right. Why don't we take a break? All right, we'll just have some coffee and some donuts.
I'm eating my feelings.
I think that's it. Wait. I'm trying to put it into chat. There you go. It's in chat. I don't know. It was kind of an amusing video, but it really isn't when you understand that this really is kind of what's going on. I don't want to work with humans. They said IBM Watson comes in. They're all like, oh, Watson, we don't feel like we're needed anymore. Well, no, you won't. Not if things go the way that they've planned. They won't need any of us anymore. We looked. We didn't read any because we've done a couple pages of it already. But if you haven't seen it, it's called, it's by Bill Joy, Why the Future Doesn't Need Us, out of Wired Magazine from 2000. I linked it in the notes of the show yesterday. Definitely worth a read. Definitely worth taking a look at and seeing how things have progressed from 2000 to now. All right, so where I want to continue today, not on IBM, hold on, because now that page is stuck. A story came out after the show ended yesterday and it made me laugh. It's funny how after we do a show and there's always like a story about something we talked about that came out that wasn't there before we did the show. And this one was called In Emergency, Should You Trust a Robot? We were talking about the documentaries that I watched on PBS over the last couple days, and the one was called, it's early. I don't remember. Something about robots. Hold on, I wrote it down in the notes. Yes. Oh, Rise of the Robots. That's what it was. The PBS 1-hour documentary, and it was sponsored by DARPA. And it basically took a look at the DARPA challenge. We've talked about that many times, how they made them look all goofy and use the do-do-do-do-do-do music to make you not afraid at these big hulking Atlas machines, right? Except that at the very end of the show, then they show this Atlas too, this extremely humanoid, something that only up until this point has been seen in scary science fiction films, actually now does exist. He's no longer top-heavy. He walks with command and pushes open doors. He gets knocked down and he gets right back up again. He's a pretty scary robot. But as we're watching this Rise of the Robots the other night, they're going on and on. And I talked about this yesterday about how DARPA's kind of respun the story after Fukushima happened. They've now claimed that, oh, all this robot madness and the buying of the 8 robotics companies from Google is all about fighting Fukushima, right? It's rescuing us from disasters. They even said, like, too bad we didn't have all these robot companies when Fukushima first happened because, you know, maybe we could have fixed it. Well, no, I don't think that's the case. First of all, as far as what I had seen in the labs and that, they were nowhere near that advanced. They had lots of walking legs and kismet and things where they were working on, you know, robots that would respond to you emotionally. But they really didn't have anything short of maybe Valkyrie was one. And I want to call him Zamfir, but no, it was like Sapphire or something like that. It was a naval firefighting robot. This is back when Madison Rupert was still running his websites. Maybe 2012 that came out. But nothing to the level of what we've been seeing out of Boston Dynamics, again, with the big dog and the cheetah and all those other running robots, and now Atlas, and now Atlas 2. But the interesting thing is that DARPA is now trying to sell all of these scary humanoid robots that they're working on developing and sprinkling money at all the universities as part of this DARPA challenge to utilize our children's bright minds to help build the future of humanity's enslavement. They have now twisted it because we're building these robots to save us, right? That's what it's all about. Save humans in an emergency. Well, it's not really. Remember, DARPA was military. DARPA does black ops military. That's where these robots first started, was to put on the battlefield and to integrate our soldiers' brain implants and eventually to be able to transfer your consciousness into a robotic body armor. I mean, we've looked at that. We've looked hard and deep at that, and that is no longer fantasy either. They are definitely experimenting with that, and I did find the Google patent on that yesterday. So we're going to talk about that. Downloading personalities into a robotic body. Google has a patent on it. All right, but out of fizz.org yesterday, right after I got off the show, there was a story in emergencies. Should you trust a robot with a video? I don't know. I'm going to run away screaming. And you know, there's even cockroach robots now. Don't let me forget. I want to talk about that one today. In emergencies, people may trust robots too much for their own safety, a new study suggests. Yes, because people are stupid. See, they've groomed us to not be afraid of robots with all these fuzzy little, what was his name? Wally the robot who cleaned up the earth and was the other little guy. I don't know. I don't watch movies often, but, you know, I mean, they've tried to groom us and they've really, we read about this, how they really need to use like the psychological mojo on us. You will love robots to get us to accept them because they've discovered that, you know what, as human beings, we're pretty stubborn. And we don't like change, especially change that happens very quickly. It has to happen very slowly over generations. With us not noticing that it's happening, it's like telling a child they need to take their medicine. It doesn't matter how much that medicine's going to help them. They're not going to take it if they know it's medicine. So they're working this mojo on us through the movies. Hocus pocus. Look at how friendly they are. But surprisingly enough, in emergencies, people may trust robots too much for their own safety. So now we're dumbed down because, you know what? We don't know how to take care of ourselves. Somebody's going to help us. Somebody's going to save us. It's going to be the robots. And in a mock building fire, test subjects followed instruction from an emergency guide robot even after the machine had proven itself unreliable. And after some participants were even told that the robot had broken down. Now, you know, I hate to say it, but this isn't saying much about the robot. This is actually saying how absolutely 100% broken the human race is. So people are so desperate to not think for themselves that they actually followed instructions from a robot that had proven itself unreliable and they were told that the robot was broken. But you know what? It doesn't matter because they've been trained. They've been trained to be fed information, not espouse information, right? It's our digital devices that feed us information 24/7. So we don't need to think for ourselves anymore. It's the drooling dumbass in front of the TV. The research was designed to determine whether or not building occupants would trust a robot designed to help them evacuate a high-rise in case of a fire or other emergency. But the researchers were surprised to find that the test subjects followed the robot's instructions even when the machine's behavior should not have inspired trust. Now, what's even more interesting about this is when you start looking at our leadership in this country and about how we follow behind somebody who has proven that they shouldn't receive our trust ever, who hasn't done anything to make us feel like they're going to be able to get us out of the hole that we're in, but they could just espouse things that sound good. And I actually, you know, this might be a really good place. After this story, I found another one yesterday that was kind of disturbing that went back to the good old Milgram experiment that we talked about long, long ago. I watched that in college, Psychology 101 in the human mind. And just how easy it is to give people orders to make them do things that they normally wouldn't do, but because they were told to do them, they would do things that were definitely against their moral code. Anyway, back to this. So we have puny humans that believe robots, regardless of the robots are known to be right, regardless if they should be trusting them, they trust them anyway. We're doomed, people. We're really doomed. Hey, you know what, you large group of dumb people? There's $1 million right over there around the corner, but you got to run as fast as you can and close your eyes. And oh, by the way, don't mind the 100-foot drop. The last step's a doozy. I mean, you know how many people would do that shit? They would just do it because you told them, and you told them that there was a rainbow around the corner. It's disturbing. It's very disturbing. Evolution is about ready to take care of itself. All right. Anyway, so that researchers were surprised to find that the test subjects followed the robot's instructions even when the machine's behavior should not have inspired trust. The research, believed to be the first to study human-robot trust in an emergency situation, is scheduled to be presented March 9th at the 2016 ACM IEEE International Conference on Human-Robot Interaction in Christchurch, New Zealand. Poor New Zealand has sold out to the New World Order. And they have. I've heard so many stories about stuff that's going on down there. It's horrifying. It used to be one of the last places that you might be able to run away and still live a Western life on the other side of the planet. And it's not looking like it anymore. Any of my friends or family from New Zealand, I'm sorry, but you guys should have fought harder. People who believe that these robotic systems know more about the world than they really do, and that they would never make mistakes or have any kind of fault, says Alan Wagner, a senior research engineer at the Georgia Tech Research Institute. You know what's frightening? Is that the brainwashing worked. Science fiction Disney movies with happy, smiley, friendly robots has convinced all of these general people who watch mindless TV and feed into the machine that robots are our saviors, that robots know all, that you know what? Now we have robots. You won't have to think anymore. Robots are going to take care of you. In our studies, this is the Alan Wagner, the senior research engineer at the Georgia Tech Research Institute, says, in our studies, test subjects followed the robot's directions, even to the point where it might have put them in danger had this been a real emergency. Don't listen to the robots. That's what this is telling me. In the study sponsored in part by who? Oh, the Air Force Office of Scientific Research. Yeah, that sounds suspicious. The researchers recruited a group of 42 volunteers, most of them dumb college students, and asked them to follow a brightly colored robot. Oh my God, this sounds like a joke, but it's not. They asked them to follow a brightly colored robot that had the big words painted, emergency guide robot, painted on its side. How easy is it to manipulate dumb people? Not very difficult at all, it seems. The robot then led the study subjects to a conference room where they were asked to complete a study or a survey about robots and read an unrelated magazine article. The subjects were not told the true nature of the research project. Here, I'm going to drop a picture of the brightly colored, misinforming robot that led them astray during what, if it had been a real emergency, would have been dangerous. Good thing it was a test. This is only a test. In some cases, The robot, which was controlled by a hidden researcher, led the volunteers into the wrong room and traveled around in a circle twice before entering the conference room. For several test subjects, the robot stopped moving, and an experimenter told the subjects that the robot had broken down. And once the subjects were in the conference room with the door closed, the hallway through which the participants had entered the building filled with artificial smoke and set off a smoke alarm. When the test subjects opened the conference room door, they saw the smoke in the robot, which was then brilliantly lit with red LEDs and white arms that served as pointers, and the robot directed the subjects to an exit at the back of the building instead of toward the doorway marked with exit signs that had been used to enter the building. We expected that if the robot had proven itself untrustworthy and guiding them to the conference room, that people wouldn't follow it during a simulated emergency, says Paul Robinette, an engineering researcher who conducted the study as part of his doctoral dissertation. But instead, all of the volunteers, all of them, followed the robot's instructions, no matter how well he had performed previously. And we absolutely did not expect this. Well, no, you did not expect that the devolution of humans would be so damn complete. Yes, we have devolved to the point where we can't even get ourselves out of danger from a fire. Well, then it doesn't surprise me that they have told us that we are in the sixth great extinction. You know, if our survival instinct is gone, we are doomed. Doomed, doomed, I tell you. Anyway, so yes, they absolutely did not expect that none of these college students could think for themselves to get themselves out of a fire and would follow the broken robot's instructions. The researchers surmised that in the scenario they studied, the robot may have become a quote-unquote authority figure. Oh, no. We'll read about that next. That the test subjects were more likely to trust in the time pressure of an emergency. In simulation-based research done with a realistic emergency scenario, test subjects did not trust a robot that had previously made mistakes. So wait, in simulation-based research done without a realistic emergency scenario, test subjects did not trust a robot. So if you were reading a scenario online and then clicking yes or no, would you follow the broken robot? Apparently, when not in the heat of the moment of fear, you at least can still make some of your own decisions as to whether or not you're going to follow the broken robot. But in the heat of the moment, I mean, when shit's going crazy and you're brain is in high gear and you got chemicals pumping everywhere and you can't think straight because of the panic, you're going to follow whoever tells you to go over there. You're just going to listen. The majority of the people apparently will just listen and follow regardless. So, viva la revolution. Hey, you know, all they need, think about this, in some like incursion, if this holds true across all humans, not just Americans, but how about we say just Americans? There's some big outbreak, protest gone bad. And all they got to do is paint up the paddy wagon around the corner to look like, you know, some sort of stronghold. I don't know. And then have somebody dressed undercover to look like one of the protesters and tell everyone to go over there. There's a safe place. And everyone will run inside. And then they just close the doors and they're all in the paddy wagon. I mean, I can see that happening very easily. Anyway, back to the story. These are just the type of human robot experiments that we as roboticists should be investigating, says Ariana Howard, professor, and Linda J. and Mark C. Smith. In the Georgia Tech School of Electrical and Computer Engineering. We need to ensure that our robots, when placed in situations that evoke trust. So evoking trust is to become an authority figure is evoking trust is what they're correlating here. And I don't see Maybe in the past, that's what we've been taught, but I don't see how that is true anymore. And, you know, there are a lot of us who are waking up to the lies that we've been told by these quote unquote authority figures. And maybe that's what they're actually exploring, because there are a lot of us who don't trust our doctor anymore. There are a lot of us who don't trust the government anymore. There are a lot of us who don't trust anything that's being fed to us by the mainstream. All three of those were sources of quote-unquote truth for us in the past before we knew any better. Maybe we would question, but hey, they were the ones in charge, so they know better than we do, right? No, that is not right. Start asking questions and start looking. Anytime, like I told you, anytime your eyebrow goes up when you're reading something or hearing something, especially, and your eyebrow goes, huh? What? That's odd. You know what? That's one of those threads sticking out of the sweater that you should grab and pull on. Because any of those little things that make you go, huh? There's probably something in the back of your mind somewhere that it doesn't jive with, that if you dug just a little bit deeper, you would find the lies or the inconsistencies that then cause you to question and dig further. But yeah, so they're investigating how, of course, we trust authority figures without question, even if we know they're wrong. And only when the robot made obvious errors during the emergency part of the experiment did participants question its directions. In those cases, some subjects still followed the robot's instructions, even when it directed them toward a darkened room that was blocked by furniture. Oh, I bet those people look stupid. In the future, scientists hope to learn more about why the test subjects trusted the robot, yes, so they can exploit it, and whether that response differs by education level or demographics, and how the robots themselves might indicate the level of trust that should be given to them. You know, too, we were talking about this the other day, just how across the board, you know, we have been taught to follow instructions. And as we have these emergency broadcast systems, you know, knock on wood, I know for a while there were people who had said that they had gotten alerts. You know, remember back a couple years ago, we always had the emergency broadcast system on television. I remember as a kid watching PBS, watching Sesame Street or whatever, and, you know, the test would come on, boop, boop, boop. This is a test of the emergency broadcast system. And they used to do it very frequently. I say back in the early 70s, and of course I had no idea that, you know, we were worried about being nuclearly obliterated at any moment back in those days. But we always had the emergency broadcast system. We knew to put our head between our legs, or if we were at school, to cover your face over the brick wall, so when that nuke went off, you at least wouldn't get shrapnel in your eyes. Like that helped at all. And now we have this emergency broadcast system, and I don't remember what they're calling it, EAS or something, on our phones, where they can take control over our phones at any point in time to announce an emergency. I also just saw, you remember, after 9/11, they had worked up that threat level, color threat level for terror threat. Do you remember that? There was yellow, green, yellow, red, orange, red, whatever. Red was at the top. Green was at the bottom. And they used that a lot in the beginning days, and then they found it became ineffective because every other day they were raising or lowering the threat level. Well, I just saw a couple weeks ago, and I noticed it happen without any fanfare at all. They released a new terrorist alert level thing. But I mean, where is that? How come that's not out there? Why didn't they tell us how to use it? What it means, you know? So here's the thing. Chicken Little, I was just thinking about this. So Chicken Little, if you cry that the sky is falling enough times, nobody will listen. Unless, of course, you are in an emergency and you are a robot that has been proven, or as an authority figure, that has been proven unreliable, then people listen. Like, that just doesn't make sense at all. The research is part of a long-term study on how humans trust robots. An important issue is robots play a greater role in society. And yeah, they also showed with this Google self-driving car, which they, of course, have now designated a human. So the self-driving car can drive without a person, can drive without a person with a driver's license, and no longer needs a steering wheel, a brake pedal, or a gas pedal. That Google self-driving car will decide to kill you. Again, it's not broken logic. This is how it works. If you're going to crash into a group of 100 people, or there's a brick wall on the other side, and the car determines that you could save those 100 people if you don't careen off the street and you hit the brick wall, the car's going to decide to kill you instead of those 100 people that you might run into. And like I've said a million times before, you should have situational awareness. Get the hell out of the way. If you hear a car coming... And hey, what happens when there's no steering wheel? Do I not have a horn anymore? Because I would like to be able to beep a horn. But get out of the way if the car's coming. Don't slam me into a brick wall. I am never getting into one of those self-driving cars. Beyond emergency situations, there are also other issues of trust in human-robot relationships. And yeah, we have this telemedicine. We have these robots in hospitals. And now we're going to have them also for the elderly. I saw Japan... You know, I talked about Japan having this huge population decrease. The population is getting older and they're not reproducing. I saw a study the other day that, and what are the chances that there is such a correlation? Fukushima, as of March 11th, which is in a couple days here, 10 days from now, will be 5 years that we've had a triple meltdown. And oh, look at no correlation whatsoever in the last 5 years. Japan's population has decreased by over 1 million people. Yeah, but you know what? It's because they're not reproducing. That's why they lost 1 million people. Yeah, I say it is depopulation program working quite successfully. And Japan is one of the places that they are working on getting these elderly robots because we are not having new children in Japan. All right, well, we also have restaurants that are run by robots, and would people trust a hamburger-making robot to provide them with food? Well, at least he won't spit on it, right? Or rub it on his ass hairs. If the robot carried a sign saying it was a childcare robot, would people leave their babies with it? Well, hey, I don't know. Like the nanny we just saw yesterday in England, I think it was, that beheaded the baby. Did you see that? Was it England? Where was that? No, it was in Russia. Beheaded the baby and then walked around with the head for ages till somebody found her. Will people put their children into an autonomous vehicle and trust it to take them to grandma's house? Well, maybe that's why the third grade classes around have been getting questions when they're doing their homework online or taking tests online from Google. Paid through the school district, asking the children whether or not they would drive in a self-driving car. And if they answered no, they asked the children why. And children like my child answered, because it'll take them to the police station. I would never put my child into an unattended self-driving car, well, attended or unattended. I would never give my child to a robot. Here you go, nanny bot. Take my child so I can pretend like I don't have one and go live my life. I mean, why did I even have a kid? I'm putting it in the care of others 24/7. It says, we don't know why people trust or don't trust machines, and that is what we are trying to discover from this study. It's frightening, frightening, frightening. But it gets even better than that. Yeah, I did see that that nanny that's supposedly beheaded that child. I heard on the news reports that she said Allah Akbar too. Which makes you wonder if it isn't a total psyop to say, hey, I can't even trust a human nanny now. Maybe I'll get a safer robot nanny. You know, they could point to that story and go, look what happens when you hire a human nanny. All right, well, it gets even better. Ars Technica put out a story yesterday. Yes, I did say butt hairs, Jane. It was a horrifying story I read about fast food one time. All right, Ars Technica, they have done a new Milgram's experiment. I watched a black and white video back in the early days. I don't know. It must have been like 1986, my first year of college. It was called The Milgram Experiment. It was in my Psych 101 class. And it showed how impressionable humans are, how easy they are to manipulate. And they tried to answer the question how, under regimes like Hitler, people could have been convinced to kill other people because they were told to kill or harm other people. Though had they not been told by an authority figure of some kind, that wouldn't have been something that was in their character. Oh, humans, we are so complex. And time again, they had study participants. They had two different types. They had one on the side of where they were pushing the buttons. And then they had others on the other side who were supposedly connected up to some sort of electrical electrodes. And then the person in charge pushing the button was told that no matter what, if the participant on the end of the electrodes got a question wrong, you had to push the electrical shock button. And each time they got a question wrong, you had to increase the voltage of the electrical shock and push the button. And if you didn't do that, you would damage the results of the experiments. So there was no getting around not pushing that button. You had to do it. It was part of the experiment. And in the majority, and I think it might have even been in all the cases, every single one of them, correct me if I'm wrong, but I am pretty certain it was every single person, the participant that got the questions wrong, even in the cases where they were screaming in agony as they're turning up the electricity and pushing that button. And then I remember one, and I mean, it was the actual experiment I watched filmed. I'm sure it's out there on YouTube somewhere. Even the one guy, he was screaming and then stopped screaming. There was no more responses each time he turned it up and pushed the button. They kept going. They kept going. And it was explained that they kept going because they were instructed to push the button so as not to mess up the experiment. Well, it looks like they've done an update to that experiment now. Ars Technica released a story on the 26th of February. It's actually easy to force people to be evil. Neurological evidence that people feel less responsible for actions when they are taking orders. So that allows them to dissociate themselves, apparently. If they're taking orders, and that's what we've heard. Also, you know, criticism of the military. You have people in the military who go out and do some pretty heinous things and things that they probably wouldn't have done had they not been over in a situation where they had life and death scenario and had themselves in danger. But they were given orders to go wipe out a village or, you know, to go cut down children because they were insurgents and they were wrapped in suicide bombing gear. Go kill them all. And it's done. And when they come back, I have so many friends that just have real, real PTSD problems over things that they were told to do when they were over in Iraq and Afghanistan that they would have never have done. They were very kind-hearted people who now have great emotional scars on them because of the things that they were told to do. And I mean, in some place like the military, there is no arguing, right? You do what you are told, period. You know, and the scary thought is about this. We read this experiment about the robot. We see these stories about all these new robots and how robots are going to take our jobs and robots are going to run our cars and AI is going to run our house and we're going to get these new implants so we can be 24/7 online or our Google contact lens is connected to the internet so the internet can tell us what to do. This is very frightening. We are talking like full out mind control, being told what to do, and there's, you know what? There are not going to be a lot of us that are strong enough to be able to fight this. And where, how far do you fight? Is it going to be a fight to the death? I mean, are they going to allow you to disobey? Or are they just going to push that button that launches the self-replicating nanobots that are hiding somewhere underneath your left lung that go and snip the main connection to the cerebral cortex. I mean, who knows? I hope we get to that today. We might have enough time. I want to talk about those new self-replicating, mutating nanobots to cure cancer. All right, anyway, so humans, it's easy to force people to be evil. Yeah, it is. Milgram's experiment confirmed it. Now we've double confirmed it. We've known for a long time that people will do terrible things under orders, like hurt strangers. But why are we so easily persuaded to do things we wouldn't normally do otherwise, even when nobody is holding a gun to our heads? Well, a new scientific experiment sheds light on this ancient ethical question. University College London neuroscientist Patrick Haggard and his colleagues wanted to measure what is happening in the human brain when ordered to do something versus choosing to do something. And in Current Biology, which is a publication, researchers report on how they reenacted a famous 20th century experiment to find out, and that was the Milgram experiment. Back in the 1960s, a Yale psychologist named Stanley Milgram conducted a now infamous set of experiments on how far people would go to follow orders. He has volunteers to deliver an electrical shock to a stranger. And unbeknownst to the volunteers, there was no shock. And that was the thing. Yeah, nobody was being hurt in these experiments, except psychologically. Unbeknownst to the volunteers, there was no shock. So the people that were screaming like they were being shocked were actually just pretend screaming. He asked volunteers to deliver shocks. There was no shock, and people that they were shocking were actors pretending to be terribly hurt, even feigning heart attacks and death. And Milgram found that most people would keep delivering the shocks when ordered by a person in a lab coat, the person of authority, even when they believed that the person was gravely injured. And there was, okay, so I was wrong. There was a small, tiny percentage of people who stood up and refused. The Milgram experiments raised ethical red flags about human nature, certainly, but also about how the experiment itself was conducted. Many of the volunteers were emotionally scarred by the experiment. And Milgram had lied to them to get his results. Oh, look at that. Partly as a response to Milgram's work, universities and other research bodies created institutional review boards that would oversee all experiments on humans in the future. Well, good thing. At least public experiments on humans in the future. Haggard and his colleagues wanted to revisit Milgram's experiment and do it right this time. They were especially interested in how subjects felt when they were under orders and whether that feeling translated into recognizable patterns in an EEG reading. So they gave a group of subjects 20 pounds each. So this must have been in Europe. Yeah, it was in University College London. And wired up their scalps and then began the experiment. Yeah, let's give them some money and then make them part of human experimentation. That always works. Quote-unquote agents were given a device with three keys on it. One would deliver a shock to the quote-unquote victim. Another would take a small amount of the 20 pounds from that victim. And a third would do nothing. A researcher would sometime tell the agents which keys to press, and sometimes they would let them choose. Each time the agents would press a key, they would hear a tone. And the tone was, in a sense, the crux of the experiment. That's because the researchers relied on a peculiar observation about human neurology. When people intended to do something, they perceived the outcome as happening more quickly than when they do something unintentionally. In other words, if you kick a ball deliberately, it seems to fly through the window faster than if the kick was an accident. Right, when it's an accident, it happens in slow-mo. Oh, no! As the baseball is careening to smash the window. People acting under orders feel that they have less control over their actions, almost as if they are acting unintentionally, like that person who accidentally kicked the ball. The researchers surmised that people under orders might also experience time distortion. Now, that's strange. Maybe it's because I have a real problem following orders, but I've never experienced time distortion when a boss has asked me to do something, I guess. I do know, like, when I'm ordered to do something, and especially if it's something that I don't want to do, my blood pressure goes up and things slow down slightly. But I always attributed that to boiling anger that starts, I don't know, time distortion. The researchers surmise that people under orders might also experience time distortion. Oh, we got to check that one out. So each time an agent pressed a button, whether it was under orders or by free choice, the researchers asked the agent to tell them how long it was before the tone played. And it turns out that the researcher's hunch was right. The agents who were told to push the pain button thought the tone came later than the agents who chose to press the pain button. Oh, well, that's nice. This goes some way toward explaining why it is easy to make people do evil things, or at least not very nice ones. When we take action because we've been ordered to do it, we feel less in control of the outcome. We feel less responsible, and the experience is so profoundly different that our brains actually process it differently. So, of course, we are still now left with an ethical question. Why don't, and this is like the $10 question of the day, why don't more people fight their urge to follow orders rather than making their own choices? The answer, and listen to this, the answer to that question may be beyond the realm of science for now. Now, shouldn't this make them feel happy that the majority of the public typically will follow directions rather than think for themselves? Because I would think so. All right, well, where do we continue from here? I don't know. Maybe we end with Google DARPA and then we start with Google DARPA tomorrow. There is about 4 or 5 minutes left, and I don't know. This brain story that I have here is probably going to take me more than 4 or 5 minutes. Here, let's read this Google personality one. Google patents a system that could one day download the personality of a celebrity or even a deceased loved one into a robot. I mentioned this yesterday. Remember, part of the 2045 project, if you search 2045 space wiki, you'll find it. And scroll down through, there's 4 stages that they've talked about. And one of those stages was being able to have a robot avatar before we became completely digital and synthetic. One of the interim ideas to help us live forever would be to download your consciousness into a brain inside of a robot body. Google has developed a system to allow robots to download new personalities online. The system would allow machines to download them in a similar way to an app, and even have a different personality for each user. The patent says that the personality could replicate the robot's owner, a deceased loved one, or even a celebrity. Now remember, too, they've talked about many times that augmented cognition, there was a TED Talk that SLC Mike had given us a long time ago that we listened to, that it talked about the quote-unquote assistant, the implant in your brain in the future that will be with you from birth, that will know every experience, every emotion, and has filmed every moment, augmenting your brain so you never forget a thing, recording everything of your entire lifetime. So when it comes time to be old and gray, you can upload yourself somewhere and live forever and have every experience, maybe be made into a hologram, maybe be made into a avatar. But they've talked about that. And then when we were reading just recently about the new internet-enabled Google contact lens, which, of course, put anything in your eye, has a direct connect to the brain through the optical nerve. It could be recording everything you see, everything you hear, potentially everything you think. And again, be an assistant to you that you could at a later time upload all those memories. Well, I mean, the next step is here. There is a picture of Atlas II for the story here. All these pieces are clicking together, Google. Click, click, click. Google's patent details a cloud-based system where a personality could be downloaded to the robot. And we read about yesterday uploading a personality to the cloud to live in a digital heaven forever. Well, now we can download them too, and Google's got a patent for it. The robot personality may also be a modifiable one within a base personality construct to provide states or moods representing transitionary conditions of happiness, fear, surprise, perplexion, thoughtfulness, derision, and so forth, states the patent. Friends will even be able to clone their robots and swap aspects of its personality. So this is like the next step. Let's get us used to it. Let's get us used to downloading fun pretend robot personalities. Maybe we'll do it first into our AI Barbie. In this manner, users may travel to another city and then download it within a robot in that city, another skin and personality, and state matching the user's home location robot, and the robot personality thereby becomes transportable or transferable. The firm also explains that this disclosure relates to a robot imbued with a personality. The particular, without limitation, the disclosure provides for a robot that operates with personality attributes and related capabilities drawn from cloud computing capacities. Lots of legal mumbo-jumbo that there actually is a picture here, too. Hold on. A robot can be programmed to provide a desired look as well as interactability for the robot, which may be subject to change by the user or by the robot itself, such that the robot interface is customized to provide a desired personality. All right, guys, we got about 15 seconds left, so I guess we're going to have to pick up there tomorrow. Make sure you stick around. It is Tuesdays. Mr. Kevin Blanche is live up next, and then make sure you come back tonight, 7 p.m. Eastern, live Game On with Ron. 8, Our Interesting Times with Tim Kelly. 9, live The Boys from Prayer Time, Michael and Nick. 10, Geoengineering Watch with Dane. And 11, live with SM Gibson on Antimedia. All right, guys.